That's the business guy thinking with that side of the brain. Salon professionals are creative, expressive, artistic. So I'm stifling their creativeness, and I'm spending more money doing it.
So today we got Dennis Doherty, and I've practiced the word Doherty about 7 times. And so Dennis was introduced to us by Rock Sandretto, really good friend of yours. Great friend of mine. Rock's been on here twice.
Oh.
Rock's been on here twice.
Well, I got to catch him then.
You do. And then Brittany was on here once.
She's a great girl.
She's great. So we love the Sandretto family.
Great people.
He's talked about you before in just nothing but glowing ways. And so me getting a chance to meet you today is great. And to be honest, everybody out there, so the way this thing works is the best guests usually are people that get referred saying, hey, this guy would be a great guest. And he said that months ago. And I just didn't follow up on it. And so I followed back up and said, hey, let's talk to this guy. And so before today, you and I have never spoken a word.
We've been talking for about 10 minutes.
That's right.
It's been awesome so far.
It's been great. Yep. So the way this works is we're going to go through your background, and then what we'll do is just ask different questions. So Dennis's focus and his like expertise is franchises.
Correct.
And so that's something I've never had on here before. Now, I've had Jason Black, who owns 8 McDonald's.
Yep, I know Black.
He's great. Love him as a human. Love him as just as a business owner. He's a great human being. The whole Black family is great. And then, but that's really my extent of franchises. Okay. I got some buddies that own Chick-fil-A's, but that's really kind of they're kind of out there in their own universe.
Different silo.
Yep, yeah. Different silo of franchises. So we're going to get into that in a second. But first, who are you? Where are you from? All those good things. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up here in Birmingham. Okay. Lived here for 13 years over in the Huffman Roebuck area.
Oh, yeah.
Dad got transferred to Atlanta when I was 13, so I moved to Atlanta like the week before my freshman year. So that was a lot of fun.
Social suicide.
Well, it gets worse. He worked for a company called Ecolab that's based in St. Paul, Minnesota. Month before my senior year, we moved to Minnesota.
Now, where'd you go to high school in Atlanta?
Lassiter.
I know exactly where Lassiter is. Yeah. I lived in Smyrna for 2 years.
Okay.
So you live right over there in that area? Yeah. Lassiter's in Marietta.
Marietta, Roswell.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. So, okay, good.
Great area to be from. It's
not bad now. It's just not as good as it used to be.
Well, it's just Atlanta. I mean,
it is Atlanta. Know,
people complain about 280. It's
280's, all over 280's Main Street compared to 285.
So anyway, moved to Minnesota for my senior year of high school. Got accepted to Auburn, but I was just a long way home from mama for that first step out of the nest. So I wound up going to college at St. Cloud State in Minnesota. And stayed up there for a little while after that. Moved back here. Moved to Miami for a little while. But Birmingham's always been home.
Now, tell me about what did your parents do growing up?
So
Dad was at Ecolab.
He was a sales guy. That's where I get my sales from. It's just kind of bred in me. And mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was back in the good old days when you could do that.
That's right.
And I miss those days. I wish I wish it was a little slower.
I agree with that.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And, having 5 businesses or how many you got, it's never stops.
It does. So, right. Phone is always ringing, and we always got to answer it usually.
Yep, exactly.
So let me ask you this. Growing up, whether it be in Atlanta or Minnesota, so probably I would say really all three, Dennis, when someone, Aunt Susie, at the family reunion came up and she said, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What'd you say?
I didn't have a clue.
Didn't have a clue?
No, I never. There was a time when I wanted to be a dentist because Dennis the dentist would be kind of cool. But other than that.
If that's your reasoning. Let me say this. One of my roommates in college, Zach Jones, love him to death. He wanted to be a dentist. He was a biomedical engineering major at UAB.
Yeah.
It's extremely intelligent. I mean, like, we were two polar opposite ends of the spectrum. But we got along great. And I said, why do you want to be a dentist? And he goes, the honest answer, I go, yeah. He goes, the money's good. I can work 3 or 4 days a week, hunt the rest, and have a great lifestyle. He said, and I think it's a very interesting field.
That's the dream. Did it work out for him?
Killing it.
There you go.
Lives in Heflin, Alabama. Got the dentist on the corner. and works as much as he wants to. His wife works the front desk. He hunts, he fishes whenever he wants to. I've seen him in videos in Texas driving a four-wheeler, jumping off of a four-wheeler and tackling a deer.
No.
Yes. So the guy,
real man.
He's a great human being, just does whatever he wants to do. Yeah. But that's the reason that he picked that. And I love the reason.
So he had lifestyle picked out before.
That's it.
Before he went into it.
At 21 years old, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't that. I didn't have that kind of foresight.
Yeah.
I went to college. I didn't even know what I was going to do. I changed majors 2 or 3 times. I went because my best friend was there, and he quit the quarter after I got
there. He leave you there?
Yeah, pretty much. So I already changed schools one time, so I was like, I'm just going to hang out. Got a market. Well, started off in computer information systems, IT, that kind of stuff, and just didn't click at all. So just got a generic marketing degree, and really, you know, I think college is way overrated.
Sure,
personally, especially now.
Yeah. Why though? Because I want to hear your answer to that. Why do you think so?
Now?
Yeah. Why do you think college is overrated?
Well, because it's incredibly overpriced.
Okay.
I mean, and as a parent that has 2 kids that are about, it's just hard for me to want to spend $150,000, $200,000 to send my kids somewhere to learn how to hate everything that I stand for.
Mm.
So, and there's, I mean, the return, I'm a big return on investment guy, yeah. Right? There aren't a lot of degrees that are going to, you're going to be able to pay that off in 3 to 5 years. Right? To get that
3 to 5 years? No.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you've got some professions that you needed, lawyer, doctor.
Yeah, things like that.
Things like that. But, you know, I got a marketing degree. My first job was selling cars.
There you go.
So I could have sold cars for 4 years and known everything I needed to know in sales. Now, I had a great time in college, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, me too.
I think the times are a whole lot different.
It's a great jumping off. I think it's probably a good spot for someone like you. It was a great jumping off. It's a great, you can screw it up.
Yeah.
And it not like totally traumatize you.
Correct. You still got the safety net of your parents behind.
There's
you.
No doubt.
It's a soft landing out of the nest, right?
That's
it's
exactly
not, it's
right.
Not just getting thrown to the wolves. And that's where I struggle. You know, I got a son, he's a junior in high school right now. And there's a part of me, I mean, the owner mentality that I have really wants to just take that $150,000-$200,000 and buy him a franchise.
That's right.
Because that franchise already has everything laid out exactly.
That franchise has got his education built in it.
He does it for 4 years that he would have spent in college. He knows everything he knows, everything he needs to run a business. He's making probably 2 or 3 times as much as anybody coming right out of college at that point.
And he's got a teacher. Now, you're the anomaly.
Correct.
But like, those franchises want you to succeed.
Correct. So that's the beauty of – and that's why I go franchises. You know, people say I'm an entrepreneur. I'm really not, because I'm taking somebody else's work and putting it in play. I've started 3 independent companies, and I'm – batting .333, so you know.
It's good if we're playing baseball, boys, but business ain't baseball.
It's hard starting from scratch, because you have a good idea and you think about that one idea, but you don't think about the legal and the marketing and the accounting and the systems and all that stuff that goes with it. With a franchise, everything's already baked in.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about I'm a franchise consultant as well, and I tell people that are looking at franchises, I talk about my wife, and I hope she doesn't see this, but
perfect.
She's not a great cook.
Yeah.
I'm an awesome cook.
There you go.
You know why I'm an awesome cook?
Why?
I can get on the Google box.
That's right.
I can Google a 5-star recipe, and if I follow it exactly, I can reasonably expect to get a 5-star meal on the table. My wife substitutes the garlic for the whatever, you know, oh, we can just put this in instead. Well, no, you can't. So it's the same thing with a franchise. A franchise gives you that recipe. I mean, it's a matter of finding that recipe that you want to cook and think you'll like cooking on a repetitive basis over and over again. And then when you have that recipe down, then you can start adding the different tweaks to it to make it fit your personality a little
fit
bit.
You.
Does that make
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, totally does.
So that's why I like franchising a lot, because you're starting, you do have to pay a premium for it, but you're buying somebody else's mistake so you can avoid those mistakes. They've already done it.
Great way to say it. Now, how did you get into franchising?
So back in 2002, a buddy of mine worked at Choice Hotels. I was taking an ex-girlfriend to a wedding, and he showed up and he said, "Hey, I just got promoted. You want my job?" And I knew what he did, and I was like,
"What did he do?"
Heck yeah, he sold franchises for Choice Hotels. So, Comfort Inn, Sleep yeah. Inn, Econo Lodge. I started off Econo Lodge and Roadway. So
okay, so let me go back. So the Roadway, the Econo Lodge, the whatever, Johnny Smith or Patel
yeah.
owns that. Right. Sorry. <Yes. laughs> Leave it in there, but sorry. Owns that specific hotel. So yep. It's just like a McDonald's.
Yep.
Right?
Correct.
Correctish?
Ish, yes.
Okay.
Similar. So Johnny owns an independent economy hotel. I would go to Johnny and say, "Hey, stick our flag on there. And we'll give you reservations. We'll put you in you'll have our system. You'll have our sister brands, all this kind of stuff."
That's good.
So that's all I did. I traveled around and
so
knocked
you
on
went,
doors.
So you went to find Johnny that owned the random hotel, the Trustful Inn.
Correct.
And said, "Hey, let's change it from the Trustful Inn to the Economy, Econo Inn or Econo Lodge or whatever, and we'll bring you this many dollars. We got a system that says we'll bring you this many dollars."
That's correct.
Okay.
That's exactly it. So that's for the conversion brands. And then I moved up into the new development brands, the Comfort Suites, the Sleep Inns, that kind of stuff. And that's where you go back to Johnny and say, "Hey, you're doing pretty good here. Let's build a hotel. You got a piece of dirt right next to your existing hotel. Let's put a Comfort Inn there."
All right, so let's talk that. We're going down a rabbit hole. This could be 4 hours, just letting everybody know.
I can talk that long.
So, okay, so let's talk hotels for a second, because I didn't know anything about this. So we're going to build – you got Johnny that owns a hotel.
Yeah.
And he's killing it. The guy's an operator. He's a dog.
Right.
Okay? You're going to open up a Holiday Inn Express. I don't know, whatever.
Sure. No.
Let's build a hotel, Johnny. What does that work like? What does that look like financially?
So back then, you're going to need about $2 million cash.
Okay.
To finance a $6 to $8 million build out, it's probably $3 to $4 million now. It's a capital intensive game. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Does Econo Inn or Econo Lodge, do they fund any? So if it's an $8 million hotel, I gotta pay all $8 million.
Yeah.
Well, what's it? It's just the fact that I'm putting the Econo Lodge name on there.
Yeah. So the bank that finances it actually requires you to have a franchise on it, because it's a whole lot easier to operate a Comfort Inn or a Hampton Inn or a Holiday Express than it is a Jason's Inn. Makes sense. So because you're getting all that support.
Sure.
So yeah, they require that. So, you know, with the, that's another rabbit trail anyway, but yeah, that's how it worked. So you're
starting to sell hotels. This is how you first got into the franchise world.
Correct.
So where did it go from there?
So I was with Choice for 10 years. Moved up the ladder, was new development salesperson of the year in, I think, 2012.
Okay.
2013, got a new boss.
Keyword being boss.
Boss. And was pretty miserable.
Really?
Yeah.
Same job.
New leader. Didn't really know what he's doing. He had never sold anything in his entire life. And this hotel franchise sales is the big leagues. I mean, it's, and I'm a little guy, but this was, you had some great, great salespeople there. And they hired
us. Is the money good?
The money was fantastic. More money than I really ever thought I'd make in my entire life.
So you were making a lot of money doing this. And how old were you at the time?
I'm
35.
I started at 34 and went to about 44.
Okay. Tell as much as you want. If in the middle of that, year five, year six, probably cooking pretty good. What are you making at, let's just say, 40?
250 to 350.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy money. I mean, just honestly, you know, I grew up a little before you, and, you know, six figures.
Big deal.
You made it. I mean, that was yeah, my goal forever. So, you know, felt like I was very blessed to be in this position. You know, and I did it well, not to
yeah,
sound arrogant or anything, but I like I said, I was new development salesperson a year. New boss came in and was pretty unhappy. Traveled a lot, missed a lot of my children's developmental years, that
so,
kind of stuff.
So $250,000 to $350,000 a year. How many hours a week are you working?
Well, if you count the time I'm on the road, I leave on Tuesday morning, get back on Thursday afternoon pretty much every week. Monday and Friday in the office. I mean, I'm in the office, you know, at home, so I've got some free time there. But
right.
And we played a lot. We had a lot of fun, but it was taxing being away. I mean, my wife was kind of stuck raising the kids, and
yeah,
you know,
I've been there.
There's been some issues with that as far as my bonding with them and that sure, kind of thing. So anyway, 21 days of prayer in 2013.
Okay. It's funny because that's right around the time that I'm making my transition.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So I'm not real happy.
I was not making $350,000 a year.
So I just pray. I mean, and it's my number one thing to pray. I'm like, God, you know, I'm not necessarily happy here, but I need a definite sign.
Sure.
That either this is where I'm supposed to be or I'm not supposed to be here. Well, careful what you ask for, because within 2 weeks, my boss calls me up and says, hey, I'm going to be in Birmingham this afternoon. Where do you want to meet? And I'm like, uh-oh.
Did you know this was coming?
So they had put me on a performance improvement plan, you know, and which was silly. But because I knew what I was doing, and he didn't understand what he was doing. So anyway.
I mean, you've been there 10 years, so obviously.
I knew the job. And it was just.
Were you producing?
I was a little bit behind that. I was a little bit. I'd missed my number the year before by a couple deals, okay, which is, you know, we're on a quota of, say, 12 to 14 on an annual basis. This particular year, I probably have two deals on the board through June, but I got a lot of stuff cooking, right? And this business, it's all back-ended. You do most of your deals in the fourth quarter every year. So he fires me that day, and I say, listen, I've been here for 10 years. I got a lot of stuff cooking. Can I have 30 days to close these deals out? Well, in the next 30 days, God blesses me with 7 deals. I'm number 2.
You closed 7 deals in 30 days?
On a quota of like 14, you know, so, and I mean, I'm humping, and I'm going all over the Southeast getting these things closed, and begging for it a little bit,
yeah,
you know, giving a lot of stuff away. But
yeah,
I got 7 deals on the board. I got a bunch of money in the bank, so we could, you know, kind of a semi, an earned severance
yeah,
for lack of a better word. So, yeah, I was number 2 on his team at the end of that 30 days. And I went back to him. I said, hey, you know, I'd love to stay, but they said no. So,
really?
But it was God.
You know, yeah, sure.
It was totally God. Because it really doesn't make any sense. When stuff doesn't make sense, it's
absolutely,
it's a God thing, right? So fortunately, I had God, because I would have been curled up in a fetal position with a bottle of Jack Daniels in my hand if I didn't.
How many kids did you have at the time?
2.
Wow.
So they were younger. They were probably 10 and 8 at that point. So a buddy of mine from Choice had moved over into – so the franchise world has pretty much 3 silos, hotels,
okay,
food, McDonald's, yep, Chick-fil-A's, that kind of stuff, and then everything else. Everything else is kind of in a big
Certa Pro
bucket. Yeah,
paint striping.
Yep.
Grass cutting bit. I mean, just anything like
anything.
That.
Anything. There's
okay. Hotel three. Okay, that's the three. I did not even know that.
They just don't.
But it goes to show what I know about franchise. I didn't know that hotels were in a franchise. I did not know that.
Yes, they all are Marriotts.
But it makes sense Hilton's. Now because, like we all poke fun at like, you know, the Patels that own every hotel sure. between you know Huntsville and the coast.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense now. All right.
That's an interesting story too, but. Another time.
Go. Okay. okay. So your friend's there.
So he moves to a company called Driven Brands.
Driven.
They have Meineke. They have Mako. They have a couple other smaller brands, but
those are franchises.
Those are franchises. So he hires me for Mako. And it's a terrible position because I'm trying to convert auto body paint store shops, independents into Mako's. Well, Mako is kind of the bottom of the barrel as far as, you know, nobody thinks that Mako is a step up for them. So, but it introduces me to this other bucket of franchises.
Yeah.
Just like you at the time, I didn't really know existed, right?
Okay, so Driven has... Tell me about Driven, because I've heard that name before.
Driven's a big company. Those are the two big names that you would know. There's a lot of smaller brands that you know, but they've moved on in the private equity world.
Okay.
So they're looking for the next buyer. Mm. They're trying to build it up. Either build it up to sell it to the next guy or cut out all the expenses to sell to the next guy.
Mm.
Right. So we were in a cut out all the expenses phase when I was there.
Okay.
And that's not a lot of fun because everybody's on pins and needles.
Sure.
Wondering when the next shoe's about to drop, that kind of thing. So, so while I was at Driven, we go to a franchise consulting conference.
Okay.
Where we're there as representatives of Mako, getting up in front of franchise consultants, telling them why they should tell their clients to buy Mako's.
Okay.
With me so far?
Yep.
So, again, my eyes were not really open to this whole other bucket of franchises. So I sat in the audience as the other franchisors were there pitching their brands. I was like, I can do that. I can do that. That's a great idea. So Salon Suites was one of the concepts that was introduced to me that day. I'd never heard of it before. Didn't know what it was. Didn't grow up wanting to be in the salon world. So yeah.
You don't look like a stylist.
So that night, we actually went to the dinner with one of the Salon Suites franchisors. I just learned more about it, got interested in it, and started researching it, and wound up landing on Phoenix Salon Suites, was my first foray into the salon suites, or into the franchise world. I signed the franchise agreements with them in June of 2014 and told them, hey, you know, I really like this concept. If you guys ever need any help in the franchise development side of things, I'd be happy, you know, I'd love to come on board with you.
So your first franchise was a Salon Suites.
Correct.
And so the question I hear is, how did you get into franchising? So you got into franchising by going to a franchise consulting conference,
yep.
working for company A, and you hear these other places and go, that sounds awesome.
Yep, exactly.
So you meet with them. While you're there,
yep.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to unpack this. You meet with them while you're there,
yep,
and then you end up buying a Salon Suites franchise.
Correct.
Okay, let's go back.
Okay.
How did you afford a Salon Suites franchise?
So, I'd done pretty well at Choice. We still had some money left over.
Okay.
And the first one really wasn't that expensive. I mean, relatively. We used some home equity and some things like that. And basically, Val and I, you know, my wife, Valerie, I remember we were at Pablo's at Lee Branch, and we were like, we're going to do this, and we believe this is what God wants us to do, and if it's not what he wants us to do, we'll move to Africa and be missionaries.
That's right, whatever it takes. You
know, whatever it is. So.
So let me go back to this. This is a question I always like to ask people. When you're making that $200,000 to $300,000 range, were you being a wise steward financially? Meaning, were you investing? Were you saving? Did you have nest eggs and all the things that like the American dream has, or were you spending money as soon as it came out? What was your lifestyle like back then?
Yeah, so at the time, while I was at Choice Hotels, I invested in a business with a buddy of mine from Church of the Highlands. Met him in a small group. It was a magazine, and we were getting some income from that, a little bit. And we had saved up a little. I really don't remember my financial situation at that point. I just knew we could afford it.
Sure.
Afford the salon suites. And it worked out. I've never been a good steward. I don't know. I wouldn't classify myself as that, just because if I got a dollar, I'm either giving it to the church, I'm investing it, or I'm spending it. I mean,
right.
I don't have 401ks and retirement accounts. I look for businesses.
Sure.
You know, because I'd rather bet on me than bet on the stock market.
The stock market.
So that's kind of my.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think how to ask this question. So you're sitting there meeting with the salon suites franchise people.
Uh-huh.
You have zero qualification to own a salon suites franchise.
Right.
Why do they give it to you?
Well, first off, it's the easiest concept in the world to run. I told you earlier, I run five of them in Birmingham right now, and I play golf every day a week, every day of the week.
Yeah,
we tee off at 7:40. I'm done by 10 o'clock, and back in the office, and you know, can operate those things. And I rarely go into them at all. I just picked up two more. We can talk about that later, but. So I'm having to work a little bit more on those right now. But once those are full, once those are converted, then I'll be back where I don't go into the locations hardly at all. Because so salon suites, for those of you who don't know, we take a retail space. It's about 5,000 square feet.
Okay.
We cut it up into individual salons. So they're about 110 square feet apiece. Salon professionals open their own business inside of our location. So they have their own shampoo bowl, their own chair, their own mirror.
All of it.
They create the space that they've always dreamed of inside of our location. We just make sure the lights are on, water's running, and the place is clean.
So Susie,
yep.
The stylist,
yep.
And Jennifer, the stylist, yep. Their 110 square feet are going to look totally different.
Totally different.
So... is there a front desk person?
No. No, I have one employee that's a regional manager that goes around and cleans the place on a daily basis and makes sure, you know, anything that happens, that's pretty much their point of contact to give them a call. I got a leak, my whatever.
So tell me about this franchise. Okay, so let's break this thing down.
Okay.
Okay. So you own a salon suite. How many, 5,000 square feet, how many people are in each suite?
In each location?
Let's just say it's 5,000 square feet.
5,000 square feet, you're going to be looking at 28, 29 suites inside that
okay,
location.
28, 29 suites.
Uh-huh.
I know the market's different in Birmingham as it is in Atlanta, as it is in Albuquerque.
Yep.
So on average, what do each of those stylists pay for rent?
For a standard suite? $305 per week.
What is there an above standard?
So there's a premium suite.
Okay, tell me about that.
About 135 square feet. So that's 355.
It's a little bit more money.
Window suites are 355 for a standard size.
Okay.
You just base it on the square footage and whether it's got a window or not.
Okay, so you've got that income. So let's just say $300 per rent. So 28, whatever that number is. What of that amount do you have to pay out to salon suites?
Do they have a? Is there a percentage you pay them every month, or
no,
is it a flat
it's per
fee?
Square foot? It's like 38 cents per square foot per month. So for a 5,000 square foot space, you're looking at just shy of $2,000.
So you got to pay salon suites $2,000. So here's your expenses: $2,000 to salon suites.
Yep.
And then whatever the mortgage is,
rent. Yep.
Insurance.
Yep.
Taxes.
Yep.
I mean, property taxes are no, not property taxes.
Taxes are included in the rent, so you're
yeah, because you're renting
triple net. Yeah.
Now, why do you not buy the location?
That's a great question. A lot of people ask that. So, when we go into a space, let's talk about a 5,000 square foot space.
Yeah.
If it's just a standalone space,
okay.
Not only do you have to have that building, you have to have parking that goes along with that, which requires acreage. So to own a facility that could accommodate one of these locations, just that you're probably looking at $2 to $3 million.
So 28 people. So let's just look at it, for example.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you got 28 stylists in there.
Yep.
Let's say 25 because it's easier math. 25
sure.
Stylists in there.
Yep.
And they're working. It's Thursday at noon.
Yep.
They're working. It's 25 people.
Uh-huh.
Say they're full.
Yep.
It's 50 parking spots.
Yep.
Say there's 10 people waiting. You're at 60.
Yep. It's big.
It's a lot of freaking parking spots.
A lot.
Parking spots are expensive. People don't understand this. Parking is expensive. And people think it's just asphalt and lines. But every square inch of property has a lot of value.
1,000%.
I mean, on the 280?
Oh, gosh. It'd be more than that. It'd be $4 to $5 million to... Just and that's just for the building. That's before the build out, right? So the build out, when we first started, build out was in the neighborhood of $100 a square foot. Now you're looking at $150 to $180 a square foot, which just I'm not doing salon suites anymore. I got lucky and picked up a couple in the last month or two. They're existing. So when we So your original question was why don't we, 'cause it's super capital intensive.
Yeah.
I mean, go back to our hotel example earlier. I could for that kind of money, I could get in the hotel world, which is a whole lot more lucrative. But with salon suites, so we go into a space. We got one over here at Patchwork Farms, right?
Yeah.
It's right here.
By the Publix.
By the Publix, exactly. So we got that space, and for that location, we got $42 per square foot in tenant improvement money from the landlord.
Okay.
If you're the landlord, you don't get that. You pay everything. So that was about $200,000 that they gave us to put that in there. That reduces your development cost tremendously.
Whoa.
Yeah. I know.
John, Tom Smith owns that building.
Yes.
Okay. Tom Smith owns the building.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Dennis, I'll give you $200,000
yep.
to come in here and build out this thing like you want it to be built out.
Yep.
And then you have to sign how long of a lease?
10 years.
It's pretty standard.
Yep.
10-year lease. Sarah, you asked that question not long ago. 10-year lease, and they're going to give you, not I say give you, supply you with $200,000 to build this thing out. How much would that build out cost about?
That build out. About $750,000 just for the build out.
So $750,000. So you got to come out. You got to come up with $500,000.
Right.
So you got $500,000 in build out. Dang, that's a lot more than I thought.
Plus, then you got the. Then you have the furnishings for the rooms, which
that's
is
not counting. Don't the girls bring? Or I say girls. That's really sexist. But like most of them are girls.
I say it all the time.
Yeah. Most of the people bring.
Even the guys are girls.
Yeah, that's right. Most of them bring in their own stuff.
Yeah.
But you got to. Oh, you got to supply the chair. You got to supply the
shampoo bowl. Wall cabinet. We don't supply a lot. We supply just enough for them to get started with what we provide them, but we really want them to go in there and make it Susie's space. We don't want it to be Dennis's space.
No.
A lot of our competitors fill up the room with cabinets on two walls, shelves next to the cabinets, mirrors here, the shampoo bowls here. There's no freedom. There's no creativity that they can put. So it's
and it's more expensive.
It's tremendously more expensive. It's Dennis's suite at that point, right? If it's just a shampoo bowl and a chair, basically that's it. they can come in there and go crazy. We want them to go crazy because the crazier they get, the more attached to that suite that they are.
The less likely they're going to leave.
Bingo.
How long do they have to sign a lease with you? Oh, Dennis.
Month to month.
Month to month?
Yeah. Do any salon professionals watch this show?
Nah, I don't think so.
So the reason we do it that way, I had the same reaction.
That's nuts. Like, you got to get somebody to look for at least 6 months.
So I was like, can I give them a discount if they stay for a year or, you know, and that kind of stuff. And they were like, listen, you can 100% make them sign a year lease. And if they break that lease, you can 100% take them to court, and you will 100% win, and you will 100% get $0.
No money.
No money at all.
I own apartments. I evicted somebody not long ago. It cost me $350 to get the eviction process going.
Yeah.
It was another $70 to do something else. They owed me $2,200. Do you know how much money I got out of them?
Zero.
$0.99.
So that's why we do the month-to-month. And we use it as a selling point.
Now, are you less expensive than other suites?
Yeah.
We're about around the same or more?
We're more.
Because you can go month to month?
Because we're better. I mean, yeah. I know that.
No, I love it.
We really, because we understand salon professionals. So Phoenix, the reason I landed on Phoenix, I was looking at a couple other ones that are really good. Actually, the biggest one I looked at, it's called Sola. There's a few of them here in town. Great franchise, nothing wrong with them, but they were started by business owners and real estate developers. The reason I like Sola is for exactly the reason we were just talking about. They had cabinets, the mirrors, the shelves. They had everything you needed to start your business. And I was like, this is great. I can walk in here. All I got to do is bring my scissors and a hair dryer, and I can start
cutting hair.
That's the business guy thinking with that side of the brain.
Hmm.
Salon professionals are creative, expressive, artistic. So I'm stifling their creativeness, and I'm spending more money doing it.
So the Sola is more business-oriented?
Yes.
And that's why you like salon suites better?
I like salon suites. So we're from salon professionals. We understand. Our founder and owner has been in the business her entire life. Her family's been in the business since 1929. She's had 27 salon professionals in her family since then. So they've kind of taught business guys like me how to work with salon professionals.
Mm.
So that's kind of the deal.
Okay. So you said this a couple of times. So you took over 2 salon suites. Okay.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question. What makes you think that you can run those 2 salon suites franchises better than your person that you're taking over from?
Well, number one, because this was an independent guy. He lived in Ohio, and basically he called his salon professionals up about 2 months ago and said, hey, I'm shutting the doors. I don't know if this is true or not. This is a story that I've heard from the salon professionals and from several people. He's worth a lot of money.
Mm.
Made his money in the oil and gas business.
Okay.
So a $750,000 income stream in Birmingham, Alabama is kind of
pennies.
Not a big deal to him. So he was coming up on the end of one of his leases, and he was like, forget it. I'm just going to shut everything down. He was walking away from it. Hope he didn't watch this. But so anyway.
I love the fact that he said that twice. That makes it so much better.
So anyway, I've got a relationship with 2 of their two of the landlords that he was in, and I just went to him. I said, "I'll take them over," and we worked out a deal.
So you said you're taking over the leases. Did you have to go to the salon suite headquarters and say, "I want Johnny's 2 franchises"?
So I had to go to Phoenix and say, "Hey."
So hold on 1 second. I thought you were Salon Suites.
No, I'm Phoenix.
You're Phoenix.
I'm Phoenix. Phoenix is a franchise. Salon Suites is not a franchise.
Salon Suites is the overarching
Well, that's the concept overall, but there is a – it's confusing.
Yeah, I'm confused.
In Birmingham, there is a there's a four-unit location. This guy, his place was called Salon Suites, and he had four locations in town. He just named them Salon Suites. That's all it was. So he called his people up and said, I'm cutting it out. So
he a franchise?
No, he just owned four locations.
Okay, he's an independent Salon Suites owner. Yeah. Okay.
So I've got to take
those. So you own Phoenix?
I own Phoenix as a franchisee.
Do you own the one in Trustful?
No, there's not a Phoenix in Trustful. There's a Phoenix Salon in Trustful, but it's not a Salon Suites. I know, they cheated.
Those communists.
So I've got to turn these salons, the brand Salon Suites that I just picked up, into Phoenix. So that's what I'm working on right now. That's why I'm having to work a little bit harder than I have.
Is it the okay?
We're at the Colonnade, the Salon Suites at the Colonnade, and there's a Salon Suites also in Vestavia City Center. The two that I picked up.
Okay, are you going to change the name to Phoenix?
Yes.
So you're going to change the name to Phoenix.
Yep.
Do you have to give that dollar amount every month to Phoenix now?
Yes.
So let me go back to this. The amount you give to Phoenix,
is a
flat number.
Yep.
So it's by square foot.
By square foot. It's not based on revenue.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's where, like, my buddy Jason Black, go back to that old episode if you want to see.
Yeah.
McDonald's franchise owner. Yeah. It was wonderful. He gives percent of revenue.
Correct.
So you can predict your outgo.
Yeah, mine's flat, which is great if you're full. It's a little harder if you're not. But it works out to about 5 or 6%.
Does it really? Okay, it's not bad. So... okay, so you're going to turn these into Phoenixes. Yep. When did you take these over?
A month and a half ago.
You working pretty hard on it right now?
Because I'm in the stage, I'm in the hurry up and wait stage.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to have an architect involved, so we had to get it measured. That takes 2 weeks. We got to get it to the architect. That takes 2 weeks. So I'm in the linear phase of it, where it's like every step takes 2 weeks.
I thought you took over an existing building.
Yeah, so they don't have ceilings.
So it's like industrial like this?
Correct. It's just open air ceilings.
You got to have drop ceiling?
We're gonna put drop ceilings in the rooms and hard ceilings in the hallways. We're going to have to redo the air conditioning systems, redo the sprinkler systems, redo the lighting, all that.
Why are you doing all that? Do you have to?
Because it's better. I mean, it's so loud in there right now. He built it. He was a business guy.
Mm-hmm.
He built it exactly like I would have built it if I had done Dennis's Salon Suites and not Phoenix. But... with no ceilings, there's tons of noise transfer. There's odor transfer. You got a lot of smells in a salon, right? And we talk about with salon professionals that are taking tours that a salon professional's secondary job is a therapist, right?
Absolutely.
It's like a bartender, right? They listen to your problems and all that kind of stuff. Well, in an open air salon, you get a little bit of that. In a closed-in room, those therapy sessions all of a sudden become very, very intimate, and it enhances the customer experience. And then that customer says,
so good.
"I've got this great space. You need to go see Jessica at Phoenix." And so they get a lot more referrals that way. So that's our philosophy. That's what we sell, at least.
That is really good. That needs to be clipped. That was when you say it like that, it is. That's not a selling point. That's reality.
It is because
like I, even sitting like when I used to have hair and used to get my hair cut, even sitting there with Madison, she would tell me crap that was like what?
Yeah.
Say what? And it was open air, like that. You know, Susie was sitting from here to that camera.
Yeah.
But I can imagine sitting in a room, closed door. With Michelle and me just pouring out my soul to Michelle.
Yeah.
It's all okay. It's all, I mean, I never even thought of these things before, but man, it's everything is a business.
I love business.
Everything is a business.
Yep.